This show is brought to you by Miami Grill. For over 30 years, Miami Grill has brought you big favorites from big cities, featuring authentic ingredients prepared fresh to order with the best cheesesteaks, wings, gyros, burgers, and more. Don't just bring dinner home, bring home Miami. Order online or in person. Pickup, drive-thru, dine-in, and delivery available at all locations. If you're craving it, they're making it. Bringing Miami Grill home has never been easier. With locations all over South Florida, check MyMiamiGrill.com to find yours. That's MyMiamiGrill.com to find Miami Grill. This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick two, three, or four players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick two or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Chris Kaufman is here. And yes, Simon Clancy is here. He's back from his project, which I'm sure he will go back to as soon as we finish up on this podcast, which, of course, leads to our annual hiatus. But, of course, this show is brought to you by Manscaped. Use the promo code 5RSN, 20% off your next order. And Biscayne Bay Brewing. Check out all of their fine beers. And, of course, you could get it at Publix, Total Wine. You could get it have it delivered to you via Instacart, Biscayne Bay Brewing. Simon, did you see the two, I wouldn't call it a presser. It was just like a Q&A. He hot off the practice field. Answered a few questions. Did you see any of it?
I saw some of the quotes, and if I'm honest, I couldn't care less. I mean, it's interesting that he looks physically different and
all that
sort of stuff. But frankly, until the regular season starts, I genuinely, and I know this is really going to upset people, I genuinely don't give a shit. You can talk all you like, you can do a million interviews, but, you've got to get on the field and prove it. And that's only going to happen come September. So, he's got to put his money where his mouth is, as every player does. There's no bigger Tua Tagovailoa backer than me, but, you've got to do it when it counts. All the signs are good, clearly, and everybody's saying the right things and teammates are getting behind him and, all the journos along with yourself that were on the call said, how just much more relaxed he was and how he developed into a different guy, much more comfortable in his own skin. And that's great. That's, that's what you want to hear. You don't want to hear the opposite of that because then we'd really be in trouble. But until he steps on the field, until he plays, until he proves it week in, week out that he can play at the level that we all believe he can, then I genuinely couldn't give a shit.
What did you make of, and I'll ask you this, Chris. I don't know if you wanted to say something here, Chris.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that the thing about, and Simon mentioned, kind of guys rallying around him a little bit, saying like Mike Gesicki's quotes were quite strong in favor of Tua. And it's sort of striking to me that that some of the stuff that we heard from teammates and stuff that, we featured it on this podcast. We talked about it. It was a bad look. Like there was some stuff that was a bad look, but it came on the heels of the season when probably frustration was at its highest, and coming off of losing out of the playoffs and disappointing, and now like the season, everybody's coming back to camp, everybody's getting back into the swing of things, and they're getting ready for the new season. It strikes me as this is the hope, this is the coalescing of hope, and so now I think everybody's kind of coalescing around Tua now, and because he's the guy, and the Dolphins have been quite clear about that. And I admire that actually. They didn't bring Ryan Fitzpatrick back and confuse things. They just have said Tua is our guy, period, end of story. And I think because they did that, it's giving everybody a chance to really just kind of rally around it. And hey, this is our guy for the year. So.
All right. Now, as far as one quote, because there's a lot of boilerplate stuff here. You know, like one thing I did find interesting when he said it, when they asked him about his offseason workout regimen, he said, "I worked on my whole body, worked on my glutes." That's his ass, dear listener. To support my hip feels 10 times better. That's something, Chris, that you had speculated on. I think last week.
I didn't
week's,
speculate. Last... That was not speculation. I'm sorry, but okay, never mind.
All right, so what's the proper word if you didn't speculate that he needed to work on that because he wasn't, let's say, 100% last year?
What I mean, word I was, would you I was... use? I would told. I mean, I was told that he was physically like he was physically not there at the beginning of the season. Not even there enough to. It wouldn't have been wise to make him a day one starter. Let's just say it that.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, it was going to be a process still. That process was ongoing during the season, and you know, it was still. I'm sure it was. I'm quite sure that it was still bothering him as the season, you know, as the season continued. His season, you know, once he started getting in the games and started getting physically into it. So not surprising at all. I think that, you know, situation like that, you get in there, you start getting physically banged around and yeah, it's probably starts to bother you a little bit more, you know, and that's, I think that happened. I know that was the case, you know, right at the beginning of the season. He was not going to walk out there as the week one starter. And I think that was a hip thing.
Yeah. And the one quote that's making the rounds, and it's, and I'm not talking about locally, it's like national already, cause it's getting picked up everywhere and everybody's looking for those clicks on it, is when Tua said, "I really didn't know the playbook really well last year." Simon, what did you make of that? And it was a pretty direct quote because he was asked how comfortable he was last year and he went on, and then he dumped that one in there. And I guess that's the one that's hot now. I really didn't know the playbook really well last year. What did you make of it?
I wonder how many of the rookie quarterbacks that played last year really knew the playbook inside out. You know, did Justin Herbert really know the playbook inside out? You know, did the rest of the guys really know the playbook inside out? I'm not sure they did because of the way that the offseason was truncated. And also, I think it was taken in a slightly different way than what it was intended. I think what he probably meant was that, you know, he then went on in terms of the context of the wider quote. He then went on to talk about how, you know, especially when it came to changing the plays, to check downs, to all those sorts of things, that he didn't feel comfortable doing that. And I think that's just a, you know, that's a verbiage thing. That's an understanding of NFL defenses thing. So I think it's probably been slightly taken out of context, but you know, people are looking to hit on something and people are looking for something to click on and, you know, and, but it, like I said earlier on, it goes back to doing it on the field, you know, and he clearly is going to be much more comfortable. Anybody coming off a, you know, almost career ending injury who then goes through a pandemic where they don't get to throw, they don't get to do anything other than sit on Zoom meetings pretty much until the start of the season, it's going to take a little while. You know, I don't think any of us thought he was just going to come in and just turn into Aaron Rodgers. That was never the case. But now this is an important year for him. You know, they've added weapons. The line has got a bit better. The running game probably has got a bit better if you add in Malcolm Brown. The receiving core has definitely got better. You know, I know a lot of people, not a lot of people, because I actually know a lot of people, but there are certain people within the Dolphins organization that I know and that I talk to, and also around the NFL, scouts and things, who are much, much higher on Hunter Long than I think we were as a fan base and an educated fan base. So I'll be interested to see how that plays out. You know, and if Hunter Long can come in and play those two tight end, pass receiving tight end sets with Gesicki, you throw in Will Fuller, you throw in Jalen Waddle, obviously Parker, how does Williams come back? I wouldn't be surprised if Albert Wilson makes the team. You know, I think he's a really good player. This team's going to have a lot of weapons for Tua, and the list of excuses that he may or may not have will begin to run a little thin. I don't think he's going to need the excuses, but I also don't think that quote was entirely contextually laid across by some of the media, like Pro Football Talk and things like that, who sort of just jumped on that specific part of the quote and ran with it. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah, his face also lit up when he was asked, you know, about his new teammates, and he was like, "Well, we definitely have a lot more firepower now," you know. So, and he mentioned Waddle by name, he mentioned Will Fuller by name. So I guess we could go to Twitter questions. Chris, do you have a comment on that particular?
Yeah, if he just said, and so the boilerplate way to attack this would have, the thing that everybody says and that nobody ever would notice or take note of whatsoever, would be if he was just like, you know, yeah, this year I'm trying to really improve my knowledge of the playbook and, you know, and dig further into it and get better with it, and so that I have more mastery of making changing calls at the line and draw, you know, basically calling plays at the line of scrimmage. You know, I'm trying to improve that this year. If he just would have said that, everybody, you know, oh yeah, that's what everybody fucking says. I mean, that's, you know, but that is what it is, you know, that is what it is. And so he's talking about like, I didn't know this well enough to just go up to the line of scrimmage and start checking into whatever play I want, you know? And so I was relying on my play caller to call plays. And so, I mean, that's basically, and that's a rookie thing. That's a rookie thing that didn't even have an off season, really. And that's what it is. So, I think it's probably just, maybe some poor wording on his part, or maybe a little bit too honest. I think, you know, Omar said something, Omar Kelly, said something about, you know, him basically saying something along the lines of, you know, he wasn't that comfortable with some of the play calls and some of the style of the play calling. But he just, you know, wasn't comfortable or wasn't knowledgeable enough to change it to really, you know, advocate. So I'm sure he's improving that that this year.
Yeah. And there's, you know, plenty of rules and things that we can't get into now because the Dolphins don't allow you to, you know, talk about alignment and plays that come out of OTA. So we can't talk about that, but they themselves tweeted something that was kind of interesting. And it was a little video where you see Tua essentially showing Jalen Waddle how to run a slant. I found that extremely interesting, right? Like trying to get on the same page on day one. Like that makes a lot of sense. Like he's basically showing them, I guess I want you here for my timing. So that was pretty good. I wish we could also report about Melvin Ingram, but the last we know is he's working out with Xavier Howard. That's it. Like this is the longest courtship in the history of football. Sammy, I don't know if you have anything to report. I was told that it's likely going to happen, but it still hasn't happened. But if it happens, pretty exciting news. No, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, last I heard, it was more likely than not to happen. And look, I don't think you can go particularly far wrong adding a 32-year-old veteran sub-package pass rusher who consistently has been able to get the quarterback throughout his career, but also plays run very well. And at worst, he comes in on third downs and, you know, creates a bit of havoc, especially if he's back to full fitness after missing, you know, you go back two seasons. Melvin Ingram was a very, very good NFL pass rusher. So even at the age of 30. So, I mean, for me, it's a win-win signing as far as I can see. And also he brings, you know, some much needed veteran, or not much needed, that's not true. He brings some veteran leadership to a fairly young group that lost a veteran leader in Kyle Van Noy. And, you know, you look around that line and, you know, it's a lot of young guys. You look around that team defensively, it's a lot of young guys, really. You know, whether that's Baker, who's still young, whether it's Wilkins, whether it's Ogba, whether it's Phillips. You know, the guys on the back end, obviously Howard and Roa. And I mean, Byron Jones was only drafted in 2016. You know, so there's a lot of young guys there. So having someone like Melvin Ingram come in and bring some veteran leadership would be, really important, quite apart from what he can bring as a football player.
Yeah, Chris?
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a good deal. I do wonder about, you know, what exactly – what role he would fill for this team. You know, I think it gets a little hazy, and I think that's partly by design. They have such interchangeability in their roles within the defense. You know, a position is not necessarily a position. So, you know, I'm curious to see how they'd play him, because nothing would surprise me there. You know, we've talked about Jalen Phillips. Could he could he be like a Shaq Lawson replacement, more so, maybe a bit more so than a Kyle Van Noy replacement? He is playing linebacker, though. They've said that, or he's playing with his, you know, 2-point stance. So they've said that. So you kind of think, well, maybe he is playing a little bit more like Kyle Van Noy. But then does that mean Melvin Ingram, who has played primarily with his hand down, especially most recently, would he be basically the replacement for Shaq Lawson? And you wonder about that. It seems like a good player. And just we talked about this at the beginning of the offseason, that this is such a weird year as far as budgeting.
Mm-hmm. He was one of the names that we said that we could revisit toward the end of free agency, and well, here we are. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's because the squeeze on the budgeting is going to leave. I kept saying there are going to be 100 veterans out there that can't get a phone call. You know, guys that would normally not only be on a roster but probably starting, and you could just, if you've got a little bit of cap space left, and you circle back at the end of the off season, and you just start scooping them up. And I think that Melvin Ingram is example 1A of that. I think they also tried to do the same thing probably with Hooker, from Indianapolis, Malik Hooker. And, you know, I guess that probably didn't work out, but then they did it with what's his name? The other McCourty. So, you know, that's what they're doing right now. This is the mode they're in. They're like, okay, where there are a bunch of guys can't get a job, can't get a phone call, we'll just scoop them up on low money deals and, you know, let's go.
Yeah, it's also really interesting. There's some OTA B-roll out there that shows Matt Skura with a bad snap, which is not what you want to put out there, MiamiDolphins.com. Okay.
Did you see Alf? Because this is your boy. This is who you're talking about.
My boy. I wonder who's Le'Veon my boy Bell, now.
Like, yeah, right. Who? Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell. He was like commenting on a Dolphins thing on Twitter, like, you know, really.
Well, he's out of a job, you know? Like, those big fat paychecks every 15 days are pretty nice, right? Like, he was essentially almost signed here last year. So who knows? Maybe it happens this time around. Yeah. I can't think that they're happy with what they got. They can always look to upgrade a little bit. Another bit of news last week was when Coach Brian Flores said that Jalen Waddle will be allowed to compete at both return spots, to which Jakeem Grant's agent tweeted out, duly noted, and they put the little googly eyes and then emoji. And then, of course, he had to delete that, which leads us to the first Twitter question. And this one's from Lloyd Elbrun. We know him. And he tweets out, are any of the people that are keen on Waddle being the kick and punt returner old enough to remember Troy Vincent? And obviously that's referring to Troy Vincent when he was an all-pro cornerback for the Miami Dolphins, blowing out his knee on a kick return against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I'll go to you first, Simon. First of all, that little thing about, I don't know if you want to comment on Jakeem Grant's agent causing a mini stink for about 15 minutes. But your thoughts on that question from Lloyd?
I care about as much about Jakeem Grant's agent as I care about your pubic hair. And let's leave it at that. The less said, the better, frankly. Look, you've got to score in all three phases of the game, and Jalen Waddle is an electric return man. I mean, let's not kid ourselves that the kick return is really a thing in the NFL anymore, because it patently isn't. But on punt returns, then, you know, I think occasional use. I mean, he played a lot of special teams at Alabama. And as we saw today, the Detroit Lions defensive tackle ended up tearing his ACL using the bag on a bag drill. Mm-hmm. So it can happen at any time. You know, Javon Holland's also a really good punt returner. I think Javon Holland averaged 15 yards per return at Oregon.
Yeah.
You know, so there's certainly players there. And but no, I genuinely couldn't give two shits about Jakeem Grant's agent. You know,
Judy, yeah. All of a sudden, the team is stacked with punt returns because Lynn Bowden can do it too.
And, yeah, exactly.
And Jerick Doakes can return kickoffs, and Noy Bunagani returned kickoffs for us last year. So
and he scored a touchdown at Auburn as a kick returner, Noy Bunagani. So you know,
yeah. There's plenty.
Florida, so yeah.
Chris, your thoughts? Waddle as the returner.
I mean, it'd be stupid if he didn't compete for that,
right?
Wouldn't it? Yeah. I mean, I get that we want to like keep him healthy and stuff, but at some point, these dudes are football players, right? They got to play football.
Yeah.
So you can't just keep them, you know, sealed in the packaging and on a shelf.
If this was the 1960s and we were head coaches, we'd say something like, "Take off your bra and panties and get out there, boy." And that's exactly what it's going to be.
Take a salt tablet.
Yeah, exactly. Get out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and by the way, there was a change in the rule. And I don't know if you saw me tweet about that today, the change in the rule as far as the tackle box, about blocking below the waist. They're extending it to the tight end box. People ask, what the hell is the tight end box? Well, it's 2 yards extended past the tackle box and 5 yards down the field and 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. So obviously that helps people that have guys that run in space. So it should help the Dolphins defense with all their over and under front. So
as if the term tight end wasn't suggestive enough, now we got to talk about a tight end box.
Yes. And by the way, that's in the rule book. Okay. The NFL tweeted out their new page to the rule book, and it says the tackle box is now extended to the tight end box.
God bless.
All right. And by the way, yeah, I agree with both of you. It's football. And what Jakeem Grant's agent did was one of the most galactically stupid things I've ever seen in my life.
He's probably not just his agent. He's probably his friend as well. I mean,
but come on, you're going to get offended because your guy's going to get,
they all have feelings.
Competition from the 6th overall pick. Like, you know, sorry, buddy, it's going to happen.
They all have feelings, man. They all get, I mean, it's just the way it is. They're people.
All right. Next question, Chris. And he's his name is Chris, by the way. His name is Chris. And
I thought you were addressing
CKB28. That could be your. Is this your?
Is that your burner, Chris?
This is literally my CK burner account. That's what the B is for.
Wow. Is that what that is? Are you sending questions to yourself? Because yes, this question, absolutely. I love this question, by the way, because I like talking about this. Because now, you know, we're no longer talking about drafting this guy, or drafting that guy, or signing this guy, or signing that guy. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk about winning football games. And his question is pretty simple. He asks, what will be considered underachieving this season and what will be considered overachieving or exceeding expectations? Simon.
I am concerned about the opening stretch of games. I think it's a really tough start to the season. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I saw it the other day. And I thought, you know, talk amongst yourselves while I get up, because otherwise I'm just going to make no sense. But I think that, you know, come on, load. So start with the Patriots. Obviously, the Patriots are reloaded. You know, obviously, big question marks at quarterback and generally offensively, although they've added a lot of weapons. You know, I think the Patriots are going to be a really good team this year if they can get the quarterback situation sorted out. They've added receivers. The offensive line is still good. I know they lost Joe Tooney, but, you know, the kid they got from Michigan last year who was outstanding can just play left guard. And defensively, they've got so many players coming back as well. You throw in Dante Hightower and et cetera, et cetera. Buffalo, obviously, is a really tough game. You'd fancy Buffalo in the AFC to get back to the AFC Championship, potentially. Josh Allen, if he can back up last year with another great year, then, you know, sky's the limit for that team. The Raiders, obviously, on the road in Las Vegas. They're no pushover, the Raiders. Indianapolis, again, that's a difficult game. You know, the Colts, it all depends on Carson Wentz. But, again, they're loaded. You had a good draft, Chrissy Pay and Odi Igbo and those guys. And then week 5, it doesn't get any easier on the road at Tampa, you know, the Super Bowl champions. Before then, you play the Jaguars, the Falcons. But the Dolphins could be, what, 1-4 going into week 5?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago on a podcast, and Las Vegas has them favored in 10 games this year. Has them as an underdog in 6 and it's a pick 'em in 1, but they have them as an underdog in 4 of the first 5 games.
I mean, I love the stretch after that. You know, yeah. Jaguars, Falcons, you know, Buffalo obviously on the road, but Buffalo on the road in October is not the same as Buffalo on the road in December. You know, but then
they have
Texans,
one.
Ravens,
yeah, they have
tough
one
game,
road game
Jets,
in almost
Panthers,
2 months.
Giants, Jets, reloading Saints, Titans, Patriots. You know, there's a way back if they start 1-4, but you know. you know, there is definitely space on the back end to kick back in if they do start 1-4. Overachieving, I suppose, would be getting to the AFC Championship game, which I don't think is beyond the realms of possibility. But I just feel like, as good as this team looks like it is on paper, there's still just one or two areas that would just concern me. You know, there's an awful lot of reliance on Jalen Phillips, for example, to come in and really, you know, rush the passer. You worry a little bit about their running back position. You know, just feels like a bit of a missed opportunity at running back that, you know, maybe they do bring in a Le'Veon Bell. You know, you get into training camp and you start to see how it's playing out. Somebody gets injured, or somebody doesn't really step for, that doesn't really feel like a factor back there. You know, there's a lot of interesting players there. You know, we like Gaskin and I like Malcolm Brown a lot at the Rams and stuff. And maybe they feel like Malcolm Brown can be the guy mixed in with Gaskin. But, you know, you just feel like you look ahead to next year's draft of Breece Hall and Isaiah Spiller and the kid at Kyron Williams at Notre Dame and stuff. There's a lot of really interesting running backs. And you just think, God, if you had one of those, it feels close. That offensive line's got a gel. You know, but, you know, you look at it on paper and you think, actually, you know, Jackson, Kindley, so the center is an issue, isn't it? I mean, what's Skura going to be like? You know, Hunt at right guard, Eichenberg at right tackle. You know, if they gel, you know, stranger things have happened. I think underachieving or overachieving or the other one, whichever, I don't care which, but I think, you know, there'll be interesting questions if the Dolphins, A, don't make the playoffs, B, finish a sort of, you know, take a step back, finish 8-8, 9-7, you know, 7-9.
Well, that can't happen.
No, it can't happen. But I think it will bring very interesting question marks.
No, I'm saying it can't happen. Literally.
Oh,
game.
No. Yeah, no. Oh, of course. Yes, it can't happen. Christ, I forgot about the other game. Well,
it's going to take me years to get.
Yeah, me too. I saw Peter King writing about it the other day and saying so and so could finish 10-7, and I was like thinking, what? That just sounds so weird. It's like the new numbers. That's weird as well. I don't like seeing like cornerbacks wearing number 2 and stuff. This is not high school.
Noah Igbinoghene is going to wear 9 this year.
Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. Whoever had this idea is a fucking moron.
What was interesting is that they told every player it's open to everybody. And Dalvin Cook said, cool, give me number 4. And the NFL told him, buy $3.5 million worth of the jerseys we already printed out with your own number.
Oh, wow.
And he said, yeah. Okay, I will not do that. Derrick Henry had to buy back $4 million worth because he wanted to wear number 2. And then he finally just said, you know what? I'm going to keep the $4 million and I'll wear 22.
Why would you be that bothered? I mean, what, like Jalen Ramsey's gone to number 2. It's like, why are you that bothered? You've been 20 for like 6 years or whatever it is. Just think of all the people that have bought your jerseys. You know,
football players are superstitious as hell, though. And you know, a lot of these players had their, you know, had some real, you know, strong parts of their football playing career and those numbers and those old numbers.
Taylor Ramsey's had a fairly strong career since he got
here. Yeah, that's true. He didn't peak in college, but.
Dalvin Cook's not had a bad old time of it either. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, maybe I'm just old, but you know, these young trends, this is what the kids want to do in it. So, you know, but for me,
can I just say though, in response to my burner account question, which by the way, I don't know how that got written. My burner account question was actually addressed straight to CK and said, how are you so handsome and smart? And that was it. This one, it's a disappointment if they don't make the playoffs, period. End of story. Just if they don't make the playoffs, then everyone in that organization is going to be disciplined, and especially the owner and the owner's group are going to consider them to have underachieved. This is the time for them. It is this year. They expect to be competing. I'm sure all the coaches and everything agree with this, you know, 100%. They expect to be competing and they're trying to win it all and they're trying to win every game and everything. But, you know, the powers that be, they're like, yep, this is a playoff team. We're aiming for the playoffs to compete for Super Bowl. And if they don't even make it into the playoffs, that will be a disappointment, you know. And for us as fans, just for those of you listeners who were alive the last time we won a playoff game, and I'm not saying that facetiously, I would say the overachieving it would be if, you know, we go ahead and advance through the playoffs and finally get ourselves that next playoff win. To me, that's, you know, call me nostalgic for when for the good old days when we would actually win a playoff game. But I think that's above expectations. But playoffs are bust, really.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember when this team would win 11 games, win a playoff game, then lose in the divisional round, and all the callers to talk radio would be talking about trade Dan Marino, fire Don Shula because the game has passed him by.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's a pretty good baseline for a pretty good season. You win 11 games. Remember, they're 17 now, so that means it would be 11-6. 11-6, and you win a playoff game. I'm over the moon with the season. Overachieving would be playing for a championship, an AFC championship or a Super Bowl. Like, that would be, you know, a huge surprise. And overachieving, underachieving is not making the playoffs. Now, if you don't make the playoffs, you better win 11 games. Because if you win 10 and you don't make the playoffs, then you weren't one of the best seven teams in the AFC once again. And that is underachieving. So you got 17 games now. Top seven get in. Be one of those seven. It's pretty simple this year. There's expectations this year. Next question is from Seth Fisher, and he's at Seth A. Fisher. He writes, and it's a good question. I kind of like this one. It says, what is a more intriguing camp position battle? Liam Eikenberg versus Jesse Davis or DJ Fluker for right tackle or Javon Holland versus Brandon Jones, Jason McCourty, and other safeties for a starting role? Simon.
You're obsessed with DJ Fluker, mate. It's like he's become.
I didn't write the question. He wrote the question.
Did you stuck that in? Like the
it's in the question.
Didn't ask about Fluker.
No, he's in the question.
He's becoming
in the question. He put him in there.
Of course he did. He's become your new Kalen Ballage. When you listen back to that, just rewind to the bit where Alf reads out this question where he says, who's going to win the battle at right tackle between Liam Eikenberg and Jesse Davis? And DJ Fluker just threw it in as if it was like, oh, I can't leave my boy out of it. I can't leave my boy Fluker.
And you've been talking him up since he signed. Like, he's our right tackle ever since he signed.
Listen, in all seriousness, listeners, our WhatsApp group, you think we'd fucking signed Anthony Munoz the way that Alf was talking him up. You know, it's almost like
Done we signed
Walter Payton when Kalen Ballage was drafted. Now we've brought in the second coming of Jonathan Ogden. So, and to be honest, I've forgotten the question. What was the question?
What is the most intriguing camp position battle? Liam Eikenberg versus Jesse Davis or DJ Fluker? Or at safety for snaps, Javon Holland, Brandon Jones, Jason McCourty?
I don't think any of them are. I don't think either of them are, frankly. I think Eikenberg will win the job. I don't think you trade up for a kid in the second round, especially one that's played three straight years and got better and better and better at Notre Dame. And, you know, I can't see him not starting the season. And I think Javon Holland wins that job anyway, because he's such a good player. I suppose the one question mark becomes, because Brandon Jones doesn't really fill that role as such. Mm-hmm. The one question for me on that back end in terms of the free safety is whether or not Javon Holland is so versatile and he's so good in the slot in terms of, or in coverage, whether or not you want to move him around like they wanted to do with Minkah Fitzpatrick. And then maybe Jason McCourty does become that kind of deep back end safety. But there's clearly an idea. Maybe it is that they're moving Brandon Jones. I don't know. It would seem odd to me if they thought that they were just going to have Javon Holland play single high, because as good as he is at that, that's not really what he's done over the past, well, not even last season because he didn't play, but the two seasons before that. You know, he plays so much of his time in the slot or in coverage. I think he's a phenomenal player. I really genuinely do. And I think he's going to be a real star. But I don't think either of those two battles are, to me, the wide receiver position is the most intriguing, because you throw in the guys that I mentioned earlier, Parker, you know, Hearns, Alan Hearns is back. You know, they picked up Robert Foster in free agency, Jalen Waddle, obviously, you know, Williams, Will Fuller, you know, how many players, Jakeem Grant, how many players are really going to make? Five, maybe six, but they're probably going to keep four tight ends, you know, Durham Smythe, Shaheen, Hunter Long, and
Gesicki.
Obviously Gesicki. And it may be that they just keep five receivers. So, you know, Malcolm Perry, you know, what happens to Malcolm Perry? Lynn Bowden, you know, there's a hell of a mix there. There's a hell of a lot of players there. You know, and you wonder whether or not they look to trade a couple of them or whatever, if you can get, you know, sixth, seventh rounders for a couple. But, you know, they traded for Lynn Bowden. You know, Malcolm Perry played pretty well when he was on the field last year. You know, we all like Albert Wilson. I know he didn't play for a year, but he looks in good shape. He's come back. The dreads have gone. He looks like he's lost about 20 pounds. You know, Hearns is, you know, Alan Hearns is a veteran NFL receiver. Preston Williams is, you know, I think the receiver battle is going to be hugely interesting, hugely important for a team that's really struggled at that position. But I don't think either of those two that you mentioned, the safety and the right tackle, are nearly as interesting as those ones, as the receiver battle.
Chris?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see, the thing is, I tend to agree with Simon that, you know, the right tackle, Liam Eichenberg at right tackle, might be kind of a foregone conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure about that, but the wide receiver position, it's not just interesting. It's almost like, how is this going to shake out? You'd almost worry about it, like, who's going to get cut, because you don't like seeing guys that you like get cut. There are big fans of Albert Wilson out there. He might be done in by the numbers game for all we know. Malcolm Perry, what's he going to do? Is he going to be playing at running back now more? And then we forgot at the tight end position. You said they're keeping four. Well, what about Seathan Carter? Who look at the contract, actually. Yeah. If you look at that contract, that's not the contract of a guy who gets cut in camp necessarily. So you kind of, it really is.
Maybe they keep three running backs and sort of sexy him through as like a fullback hybrid. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 That's what I was kind of wondering. Yeah,
maybe Malcolm Perry is a running back this year, which is what I was believe he was last year. You know?
Yeah. I could see that as well. So that's all going to be interesting.
Let's say they keep five receivers. Who do you think they keep right now?
Boy, isn't that tough? It's Will, extremely Will tough. Fuller and Devontae Parker and Jalen Waddle are easy, right?
Yeah.
But then from there, you know, you got Preston Williams and Jakeem Grant and
Mac Hollins, who has the C Alan on his Wilson chest for special teams.
I don't see Alan Hearns making it. Who am I forgetting, Simon?
Bowden,
that's right. Bowden and Perry. Perry, you know, I think he could move. If he's not moving to running back, then his chances of making the roster are not great.
Robert Foster is another.
Yeah. Foster. Yeah, I think his chances of making the roster are not necessarily great.
I think they're pretty thin. But I mean, the receiver position right now is Bowden, Foster, Fuller, Grant. I mean, another name we haven't mentioned is Mac Hollins.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's captain. Alan Hearns, Kyle Loxley, Kirk Merritt, Devontae Parker, Malcolm Perry, Jalen Waddle, Preston Williams, Albert Wilson.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
I mean, let's just say, for argument's sake, let's just take the bottom five guys and say they make the team. Parker, Perry, Waddle, Williams, Wilson. Okay, not beyond the realms of possibility. You could also, and how, since, you know, how have we ever been in this position where you could also say Bowden, Fuller, Grant, Hearns, Hollins. Do you know what I mean? You could probably get by with that situation. So it's very interesting.
Well, it's also going to be interesting if some of those guys that we talk, you know, which guys are practice squad eligible and not anymore. And so you might see
Perry,
some of the
Merritt.
Right. Like, you might see some of those young guys Bowden. Being kept around as opposed to the old guys like a Hearns because practice squad eligibility. I'm actually kind of looking forward to seeing Kyle Loxley. I think I think he's an interesting athlete from what I've seen of him. It's going to be something seeing how that wide receiver unit shakes out, which is, you know, it's good for us, obviously. Depth issues.
Which leads us right into the next question from Morton Smedholen.
Before you ask that question, can I just say that if Mac Hollins, Kyle Loxley, and Kirk Merritt all get cut, let's say they're the first three guys to go, what will that mean with regards to the receiver position? It's a very specific point. So we lose Hollins, Loxley, and Merritt. What would that mean for the receiver position?
Do we no longer have any players with K in their name?
No, it's a good effort, but it's not right.
If Collins,
Matt Collins, Kyle Oxley, and Kirk Merritt are all cut, what does that mean for the receiver position?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't...
It's an even better answer, mate.
I want the answer. I don't care about the answer.
It would mean, I'm pretty certain it would mean this, but it's twofold. I think for the first time in the history of the Miami Dolphins, we would not have a receiver wearing an 80 number.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Bowden 6, Foster 14, Fuller 3, Grant 19, Hearns 8, Parker 11, Perry 10, Wardle 17, Williams 18, Wilson 2.
Wow.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah, that would absolutely be, yeah, that would be a fact. If that
when you fuckers are tweeting that, not you, but the listeners, when you're tweeting that and claiming that as your own, just at in your boy where you heard it first, all right?
All right, this is a pretty simple question. It's from Morten Smedholen. He writes at FinFan Norway, and he asks, which wide receiver do you think will have the most receiving yards and touchdowns this season? He also asks another question, which seems to be directed at me. Do you recommend staying in Miami or Fort Lauderdale when traveling over for a game in November? Really depends on how much money do you have. If you want to go to the Hard Rock property, it's beautiful. But, you know, you're talking about $500 a night. But if you're only coming for a weekend for a Dolphin game, you know, spring a little bit. That Hard Rock, the Hard Rock guitar it's beautiful. It's the most beautiful hotel in all of Miami. Otherwise, stay at the beach, you know, or stay at Hollywood Beach. It's pretty cheap there, you know, thinking under $300 a night. So that's where you probably want to stay for a game.
La Quinta it is.
Yeah, the Red Roof.
Well, we're talking about Miami. There's not many cheap places down here. Like, what am I going to recommend? The Fountain Blue at $600 a night? No, right? So I give them some pretty good options. You know, if you're coming to Miami to see a game, you know, have a little fun for the weekend. You're going to get good weather. It's going to be November too, which is the best weather we have year round. So he basically asked, who's going to be the alpha? In my opinion, I'll start first. Man, Will Fuller, I think, would have the best numbers on this team.
Oh, what was that first question again?
Yeah, his first question was, which wide receiver do you think will have the most receiving yards and receiving touchdowns? Like, he essentially asked who's going to be the alpha out of this group. Mm-hmm. I think Jalen Waddle could have the most touchdowns, but I think Fuller could have the most targets. I think he's going to have the most opportunities. Your thoughts, Simon?
Yeah, I think, if we're playing a game tomorrow, I think Fuller and Parker would be the starters, and depending on – you know, how camp goes, you might see a Bowden or a Waddle or a Williams in the slot. I think Fuller will probably have the most yards. I think it's up in the air for touchdowns. I really like Albert Wilson. I think Albert Wilson, if he makes this team, I think he could make a bit of an impact. You know, I thought he was a really good player before the hip injury. You know, I agree with you on Waddle, you know, if Waddle, but, you know, rookie receivers makes you nervous because they, you know, they barely contribute half the time. And, you know, Jalen's a small guy. They're going to obviously have to get packages in for him specifically. But yeah, I think you're probably right with Fuller most yards. And I'm going to go Albert Wilson most touchdowns just because I like him.
All right, Chris?
I think Fuller is just – he's totally legit as a player, as a receiver. And so he is going to be, I mean, he caught 8 touchdowns last year. So it's not like he's not producing touchdowns. I think he's that alpha. I mean, when you watch him, it's just like, I mean, this is what you appreciate about Jalen Waddle too. It's like, you never don't see him open. Right. and Will Fuller is watching the All-22. Will Fuller's like that, except this is against NFL players. So that's a big difference. And I think that he stays healthy. That's, which is always a big if, of course, but yeah, he's going to be it, man. 8 touchdowns in 11 games last year. That's, yeah, he's going to be all right. He's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. And my favorite number, the yards per target number, he had a number of, what was it? 11.7 yards per target. Let me explain that to most of you. That's higher than Julio Jones's average by almost 2 yards. Okay. Yes, he had a very, very good season last year. That was a steal. If we get that type of production this year from Will Fuller, yeah, we're extending him. And at the very least, we're franchise tagging him. All right, there was so – and since we're talking wide receivers, there were so many questions about this that I'm just going to jumble into – I'm going to get all of it, put it all together, and jumble it up into one question. And I'll give the guy who asked the question succinctly, which was Shane Marinelli at Marinelli Shane. And he asked, once you get past Parker, Fuller, and Waddle, who's number 4, number 5, and number 6? There was – well, let me see – 23 questions about that. Who makes the roster as wide receiver? So let's answer it for these 23 different listeners. Simon, you seem to have a pretty good handle on this. Parker, Fuller, and Waddle are locks. Mortal locks, really. Unless one of them gets traded.
I think Parker could get traded, potentially.
So who makes 4, 5, and 6?
It wouldn't shock me if Parker got traded, but let's say nobody's getting traded. I would say Fuller, Parker, Waddle, Bowden, and then one from Williams or Wilson if there's 5. That to me makes, you know. And then you could make a case for a lot of those guys. You know, Matt Collins, yeah, somebody's got to play special teams, you know. Perry played well last year. You know, Tua clearly liked him. Preston Williams has played 10 games in 2 seasons. You know, how can you rely on that kid? Albert Wilson hasn't played for, as much as I'm eulogizing about him, he hasn't played for, Christ, season and a half now because of the hip injury, or 2.5 seasons? I can't remember.
And hip injury is no joke either. No.
He played at the end of 2019. So he's been out for an entire season is what he's been out.
Yeah.
And it's tough to come back from what he's come, and that's the concern with him. But I will say in your favor, Simon, if he does come back, what's interesting is looking at the roster breakdown. Obviously, Jalen Waddle is going to be given the chance for the slot. That's what he was at Alabama, a specialist there, and so he'd fit right in. But at the same time, you know, what kind of slot is he? That's the question. Is he as polished as an Allen Hurns in the slot? That's sort of so who's backing him up? Who's competing with him? Because they said that he's not being handed the starting job. So he's competing with somebody. Who's he competing with? That's the first question. Is it Albert Wilson? Is it Allen Hurns? Is it Lynn Bowden? Lynn Bowden himself, you know, quarterback in college and new convert. I mean, running quarterback in college, running back in training camp, and then wide receiver in the season last year. Is he the big competition for Jalen Waddle? Personally, I don't think so. I think that Jalen Waddle is like, you know, everything you could have hoped for in Lynn Bowden plus speed. And so I don't think that's very serious competition. But you could say something for Albert Wilson because he's a veteran, you know, he's got experience, and he could really compete in that slot. So he could be number 4. But otherwise, I would say Preston Williams.
I saw Albert Wilson in 2 camps, and one thing I can say about Albert Wilson is that he's not a camp player. I think he's going to have to be a camp player to make this team. Don't you think that would hurt him? Do you think that hurts his case, Simon?
Maybe.
I think Preston Williams, I don't think they could get anything for him in trade, and I think he'll be too valuable on the roster because we've seen him produce. The problem is that he's always hurt.
Yeah, exactly. And
so I think he's number 4.
You can't carry a Devonta Parker, a Preston Williams, and a Will Fuller who've all got injury issues.
Yeah.
And a vastly undersized Jalen Waddle as well, coming off an injury. Do you know what I mean? I think it's, you know, I'm not saying that doesn't play for Albert Wilson either. But, you know, the issue that the Dolphins have is they've got a lot of players, you know, Fuller, Grant, Hurns, Parker, Williams, Wilson, Waddle, asterisk, you know, have all had fairly significant injury issues over the last 18 months. You know?
Well, Jakeem Grant is injury prone. We know that too.
Yeah, yeah. I think I said Grant, but yeah. I mean.
Oh, you did? Okay, sorry.
Yeah. But,
Yeah, what I mean, but
Simon, there's nowhere to run.
No.
The entire wide receiver roster, just about, unless we're going for Kirk Merritt or Kyle Oxley here,
yeah.
Is is injury prone.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's rough to get 4, 5, 6. I'll give it a crack. I think Matt Collins has to stick in one of those spots. And if he doesn't stick in one of those spots, they'll sacrifice a tight end to somebody. Maybe. And Matt Collins could play in that type of role.
Maybe a more interesting question is who plays on special teams?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Malcolm Brown probably plays on special teams. Does Patrick Laird make the roster? I doubt it. You know, you've got to think that.
I think Duke Riley is a lock as a special teamer this year.
You know, Beagle, special teams. Riley, special teams. Elander Roberts, special teams. Van Ginkel, special teams. You know, does Fajedlam make the roster? I mean, he's a special teams captain.
Yeah, that's
no, I wouldn't say so.
No, I wouldn't say personally. So either, but no. Noah Igbinogene probably does. Brandon Jones plays special teams. And then Shaheen, Smythe, Hunter Long, Seathan Carter. Carter could be a special teams captain. You know, he could replace Matt Collins. You know?
Yeah. That's a good one right there.
Justin Coleman. I know this is neither here nor there, though, because you mentioned Noah Igbinogene, but did you notice, like, the coach comments when they're talking about him? They started to use versatility more as a buzzword.
I saw that
with him, and I thought that was interesting because that's code, you know, that's code for he's being tried a slot, and I think that's interesting because that was what he couldn't, you know, they wouldn't do with him last year. And his first year with the team, first year in the NFL, you know, only what, his third year playing defense at all. And so that now it looks like they're ready to try him there. And that just gives Nick Needham and Justin Coleman even more to think about.
You see those workout videos? Maybe they should try him at linebacker.
He's a big huge dude, isn't he?
He's huge this offseason.
Big
huge
dude.
You know he's big when he stands next to Xavier Howard and J.C. Horn, both guys who are not small corners, and he makes them look small and frail, which is weird, right? You know, but making J.C. Horn and Xavier Howard look like, you know, small and frail, yeah, he's big. You know, I think they're loaded at in the secondary. That's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. It's nice to see that they're going to put a lot on Javon Holland's plate, see if he could digest it, maybe come out with a big snap eating role, which it seems it's going that way.
That's not their habit though. With rookies, they don't put a lot. You know, they'll throw them into the fire as far as competing with anybody. You know, go out there cover. You know, the best player, Stephon Diggs. You know. You're an NFL player, show it. So they're not gonna hold anybody's hand that way. But they don't really put a lot on rookies' plates from a mental standpoint. Too many different positions. They don't really crowd their head with too many different positions. They're very cognizant of that. And so that's why I think the Javon Holland thing is going to be interesting. Is what do they focus on, and with him, because they're going to focus down at some point. And so what do they focus on?
All right. Another theme that we had in our questions and all the questions that we received were essentially asking about the offensive line. So I think we did an episode a couple of weeks ago where we talked about this. My offensive line is pretty simple. It's Austin Jackson, Solomon Kinley, Matt Skura, Robert Hunt, Liam Eikenberg. That's my five. Simon, do you disagree with me there?
No.
Yeah. Chris, I think you agree with me 2 weeks ago. I think you only had like maybe Jesse Davis could sneak in somewhere.
No, I don't. I didn't say that.
Okay. So yeah.
No,
so
I think Jesse Davis is a nice utility backup.
Amazed you didn't have DJ Fluker in there, Alf.
Yeah, I'm
DJ Fluker at right guard and Robert Hunt at right tackle would have been Hall of Fame worthy right side of the league.
Is that put Liam Eikenberg at left guard? If you would have gone with that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
So okay, let me
That's
ask
appetizing.
You this, both of you this, because I just gotta know, what is the plan B at center? If Matt Skura cannot snap, like what are we doing there?
I have no idea, and I've looked for an idea on the roster, and I don't see one. maybe they have enough assets to think that somebody's going to get cut somewhere.
Simon, Jugs machine.
What yeah, I'm assuming it's Dieter, right? Uh-huh. I mean,
Or Cameron Tom or Tyler Gauthier. Yeah.
I think it's probably Dieter. I'm practicing how to snap the ball.
But yeah, I mean, it's the eternal question I don't have an answer for. I mean, again, it's the other position on offense that just makes me nervous. Center and along with running back.
I think Solomon Kinley, one interesting thing on this offensive line is Solomon Kinley at left guard. He better be good because they have a lot of answers there if he is not. I think, you know, he's going to be pressed all year.
It's his natural position, so he should be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I have high hopes for him.
Mm-hmm. I thought he was decent last year, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right, just two more questions. This one's pretty simple. Brandon Heron, he writes, at FinFan for Life 91, do you guys think that they resign Gesicki? Simon.
Oh, they should, but the way that they're moving in terms of Hunter Long makes you wonder whether they're not, but they absolutely should.
Yeah, it's suspicious, isn't it, Chris?
Mm.
I say it's suspicious. I suspect that they've really remade, and it's not just about Hunter Long either. If you look since they've got here and what they've been doing at the tight end position, it's conspicuous in the way that they've remade it. And the way that they've remade it is not, you know, we want neither Durham Smythe nor Mike Gesicki. You know, we want the guys who do both. Find you a man who does both. You know, that's what they keep doing at tight end. And so I find that suspicious.
Yeah. And we'll know soon enough. As soon as they start playing those preseason games in August. And yes, fans, listeners, preseason games are back. They're playing three of them. So as soon as we see those preseason games, we see their alignments. If you see a lot of inline tight end stuff and you keep seeing it over and over and over again, then the season starts and you keep seeing more inline tight end stuff. No YISO, no Mike Gesicki in the slot. Yeah, he's on the way out, and he might be on the way out at the trade deadline even, maybe, possibly. Because they could just see it as, man, somebody dangles a second-round pick in our face. For Mike Gesicki, and they would have to dangle a second round pick, right? Because how would it work, Chris? I think you know this better. He walks, he gets $12 million a year from somebody. Let's say, I don't know, Dallas. Dallas gives him $12 million a year. What kind of pick can we get for him?
Compensatory?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That would qualify for a potential third round pick.
So obviously
you have to structure your whole offseason around that.
Yeah, so if we trade him at the deadline, like the asking price has to be a second-round pick, isn't it?
They might accept the third-round pick just because it's, it's bird in hand. Yeah, because, you know, you have to structure your whole offseason around the compensatories in order to make sure you qualify for that. And so flexibility is the name of the game. That's why they do a lot of the things that they do from a salary cap standpoint is to maintain optionality. And so I think that, that could be it there is if they get the right offer. I don't think it's happening personally, but it could. It's conceivable.
Yeah, I would say, you know, we're not saying that they're trading him, but I would say you're going to get a lot of evidence that's going to tell you one way or the other whether he's a Dolphin in 2022, and those are those first three preseason games and maybe the first handful of games in the regular season. Watch how they use the tight end. If he starts pulling a disappearing act, then you're getting your answer right there. All right, last question is from David Engelson, at David_Engelson, and he asks, what are your time frames from this season onward from when the Dolphins, and then he writes, you know, in order, you know, maintain a winning record, make the playoffs, win playoff games, win the AFC, win a Super Bowl. Like, what are your time? Do you have a timeline going forward, Simon?
I love David, and his wife is doing amazing work as a frontline health worker, a doctor, or a nurse. I can't remember which, but anyway, But I don't have a timeline. But I think this team is putting itself in a position to have a timeline when it comes to things like winning AFC Easts, winning AFC Championships, and potentially winning Super Bowls. If it's not going to be now, during this era that they've set themselves up, it looks like they've got the right head coach. We all hope they've got the right quarterback. They've positioned themselves brilliantly in terms of cap numbers, in terms of draft picks. We all feel like they're drafting well. If it's not now, then when's it going to be?
Chris?
I think the timeline is just purely right now. And I think that's the point that Simon was making, is there is no timeline anymore because it's now. You know, it's now and forever. So the only question, the relevant question, is like, at what point, how long do we think that we can keep this up before there's, you know, some sort of rebuild down the road? But I think the time is just absolutely right now. There's no timeline anymore. We're not supposed to get a little bit better this year and then a little bit better next year, and then I know it always sounds nice, but that's usually not how the NFL works. How the NFL usually works is that you're good this year, and then you're shit next year, and then you're good again. And so I think that's the way you see it happening. So so the time is now. There's no more runway left.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Shit or bust, lads. Shit or bust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got to do something now. I would say if you want an actual timeline before they have to give Tua Tagovailoa $300 million for 7 years or whatever the hell it's going to be in 3 or 4 years, you want to get something. You want to win something significant before then. The only thing that you can win that's significant is a Lombardi. So I'll give you that. A Super Bowl inside of 4 years. How's that for actual timelines?
Just all a right? number. Yeah. To me, it's just now and every year.
Well, but that's the window they've created with this talent, with the talent on the team, right? Like, that's when they could,
yeah,
you know,
but, I mean,
reasonably pay all these people.
That could be rolled forward. I mean, that could continue to be extended. It's not that window is not going to necessarily close just, you know, in 4 years or 3 years. So I think, you know, I think we're good.
All right. That's it. There is no more for this episode. You got a very meaty episode here with your Twitter questions. We are on hiatus. See you in about what happened?
Thank fuck for that.
Yes.
Oh, fuck me, yeah.
What are you guys gonna do with your month long hiatus here, Simon?
Sleep.
All right, you're sleeping and you're
not
working.
Not be awake at 1 o'clock in the morning talking shit with you two.
All right, Chris. What are you gonna be doing?
I'm thinking strippers. I'm thinking cocaine. I'm thinking of just totally spiraling out of control.
Sounds like fun. All right, yeah. That's it. There is no more. See all of you in about a month.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.